Here's Bob McKenzie, your TSN Hockey Insider. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how you doing, boys?
We're good.
Well, we're talking Boo Gate, man. How many gates have you covered in Toronto in your career?
I don't know. The gate thing's got to end.
Yeah, it is kind of annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I mean, how would you cover a story like this, Bob? If you were at the rink last night, would your focus be on Gardner? Would it be on the fans? What kind of piece would you be writing?
Well, I mean, there's a huge degree of sensitivity on a lot of different levels here. I always start with the basic premise. You pay your money, you get to express yourself within reason, of course, obviously, you know, no obscenity or anything over the top that would negatively impact the, you know, somebody else's enjoyment of the game. But, you know, you pay a lot of money, you're a fan. You know, the very derivative of the word fan comes from fanatic, so you can sometimes get some extreme but acceptable levels of discourse that fans are allowed to enjoy. So that's number one. Number two, personally, just me, and this is a real personal viewpoint, I guess I don't mind booing for a lot of the reasons I just outlined, but there's something about it. To me, it's the mob mentality. And it's like, okay, I understand there are a lot of people who are unhappy with Jake Gardner, and he's a polarizing lightning rod type of player for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And quite aside whether that, you know, whether you view that as right or wrong or anything else, you know, you're going to have fans who express themselves. But I find that when that snowball gets rolling down the hill, then it starts to become a little bit unruly in terms of there's a mob mentality to it. And I don't like that on any level, because that's where I find weak-minded people who otherwise wouldn't think to do this themselves. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's jump on the bandwagon here. And the next thing you know, you've got a full-fledged movement that is, you know, it's a hugely negative thing for a human being. And yet, that's why they get paid big money, and they're supposed to be able to suck it up. And you guys, you know, and Noodles, you guys are professional athletes. You know what it's like to be on the receiving end of stuff, and it kind of goes with the territory. So, you know, that's where Jake and other individuals, I guess, they got to be strong and take it. But I just find something a little unseemly about the whole thing when it kind of gets almost to an organized level. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, I'm with you on that. Yeah, I agree with that.
And you know what? I'm at the end of the day, and again, I'm a human being, so I try to understand other human beings, so I give the fans their right to boo, and yet, you know, I feel bad for Jake Gardner. The guy's a human being, and things are going tough. And I think some players in the history of hockey, and whether it was Larry Murphy in Toronto or whatever, you know, they're predisposed to garner that type of attention. So what I would say about Jake Gardner as a hockey player on the Toronto Maple Leafs is, for the fans that boo him and want him to leave town, be careful what you wish for, would be my assessment of it as somebody who covers hockey. And that when I look at the list of problems on the Toronto Maple Leaf defense, bearing in mind, you know, you can't evade the -5 against Boston in Game 7. You can't evade the big mistakes that Jake makes that are just seem to be so glaring and at times so plentiful when they're happening. But in the grand scheme of things, when I look at the Toronto Maple Leaf defense, the list of problems on the Leaf defense, Jake Gardner's not in my top two. You know, playing Ron Hainsey as high in the lineup, and again, I like Ron Hainsey. I think he's a really good stabilizing veteran influence. I just think he plays too many minutes and too high in the lineup, and because they don't have a right-hand shot to play with Morgan Rielly. So that to me is a problem. And yet, you know, not in the sense of, oh, look at how terrible Hainsey was tonight. More nights than not, he does. He makes a lot of mistakes too, because he's probably playing more minutes and in a higher role than you would expect. And then the other one would be, I look at Zaitsev and the length of his contract, and I was amongst those who wasn't sure at the time that it was, I wasn't convinced that it was necessarily a bad deal, because I thought what we saw of him when he first came here showed a great promise of things to come. But to play as many minutes as he plays, understanding that he is perceived to be a defensive defenseman, and to have as little offense to show for the minutes that he plays, alongside, much of it alongside Jake Gardner, that to me is stunning in many respects. I would think just by virtue of the minutes played, you would have a lot more points and a lot more meaningful points than what Zaitsev got. So, yeah, I think more nights than not, Jake's a positive influence, and I understand all the negativity that goes with that, but I would just say be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I think there's you know, a lot to unpack there. I'm with you on the majority of it, too. I think... You know, what there was context to what sparked the booing. I do think game seven from a year ago, this is a guy who's been here for 8 years. You know, there's been a lot of sample size of the good and the bad with Gardner. But the play that he got exposed on last night was an effort play. You know, and that's what I think the majority of the booers, I would think, to get into their mind, was likely reacting to, was that, you know, he had that play. It was a 70-30 battle, 80-20 battle in his favor, and he lost it.
Right.
And it ends up in the back of his net. But, you know, I think also what stood out to me, Bob, and I'd be curious to get your take on this last night, was the emotion of the players postgame. Mitch Marner, you know, it was almost like he was trembling
to
an extent.
I brought that up,
But I think what that speaks to is how, really, it's been so smooth for these guys. Like, they roll in, Marner, Matthews, Nylander, and they're immediately a playoff team, and the jerseys are running off the shelves, and everyone loves them, as they should, you know. But this can happen in the pros. You know, people can turn on you.
Absolutely. The road to contender status in the National Hockey League is littered with ups and downs and really tough times. And absolutely, that's true. And I mean, you know, Marner's probably thinking, hey, I was the one who gave the puck away. I mean, right. He was the one who turned it over at the blue line. That wasn't Jake. Jake was trying to cover up for Mitch Marner's mistake, which happens. That's, you know, hey, if you're going to have the puck on your stick as much as Mitch Marner's going to have it, you're going to make mistakes. They happen. Mm-hmm. But he's got a lot more goodwill and currency built up than Jake Gardner does, because Mitch wasn't -5 and hasn't been around as long, and he's been lights out. He's been so fantastic, nobody would find fault with his game, and rightfully so. But he gave the puck away at the blue line. Jake's trying to make up for it, does a good job of hustling back. And I see, I wasn't sure I necessarily interpreted it the same way as you. I'm not sure it was an effort play. I thought it was poorly executed, and listen to me, watch me skate. But, you know, he goes back to get the puck, and I thought the effort was there, but that he kind of overplayed going one way, and he made a mistake, and the guy took advantage of it and took the puck and went in and scored.
Bobby, Brian's been begging for years to have more movement in the National Hockey League, and I'm not specifically talking about Jake Gardner, but it just seems like when Jamie and myself played, it was like when a team was in a rut, it was like make a trade and spice things up.
GMs used to be, I don't know, used to be is the wrong word, but there was always... They floated down to the room. Like, there was that fear.
But
like,
just to spice it up a little bit for a quality team like Toronto, that's just, those things are not happening anymore, are they? It's just, trades just don't happen. GMs used to spice it up, and it just doesn't happen.
Bob Murray did one yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Dallas and Anaheim did,
Yep. You know. That was designed to try and shake things up, because Cogliano is a really popular player in the Anaheim room, and I think Bob Murray and listen, he wants to get younger, and he picked up 7 years in getting Devin Shore. I think he wanted to try to create a little discomfort or a few ripples or waves in the dressing room and just change the environment. So they do still happen, and general managers will do it. It's harder to do now. The salary cap becomes that much more difficult, and everything gets analyzed seven ways to Sunday. So even if you do make a little shuffle move, next thing you know, you're getting crucified for a good deal or a bad deal or whatever the case may be. But I think part of the problem, too, is that the league is just so... It's because it's this jammed-up league where there's so little separation. And so now everybody's... You know, the constant theme right now is, okay, Toronto's in trouble. You know, now they better start looking over their shoulder, because guess what? You know, here come the Canadians, and here come the Bruins. Here come the Bruins, here come the Canadians, here come the Sabres. You know, here comes this team, here comes that team. And suddenly, where you thought maybe you could try and chase down Tampa Bay or solidify home ice, suddenly there's all these teams that are going to eclipse you. If I saw a lot of that on Twitter and in the media sphere. So, to which I would simply say, the same people who are saying that now are probably the same people who had the Buffalo Sabres, getting one of the top three spots in the divisions a month ago when they were on that incredible jag. And I remember saying to you guys at the time, just wait. you know, they're not that good. They're not nearly that good. And now fans in Buffalo are all getting all bent out of shape. Whoa, think we should fire Housley? Because now they've gone like 6-11-4 in their last 20 games or whatever. And but no, that's just the NHL. And teams have runs and teams have slides. And you try to even them out as best you can. And something tells me that the Leafs are going to be okay in terms of the grand scheme of things. But this little stretch, this 10-game stretch that they've been relatively mediocre, is just that. It's just a stretch, and I'm sure they'll find their rhythm again, and then I'm sure they'll lose it again. And if you're a good team, you find it at the right time, and you get on the playoffs.
With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, Western Conference rematch tonight, Winnipeg, Vegas, and neither team, you know, both teams are fighting for position within their own division, but I don't think either team is really concerned about a playoff position because, you know, they're both 13 points up on the ninth place team in the West.
Yeah.
So, you know, it feels a little bit different at West, and we were talking a little bit about this yesterday, Bob, but those are two teams. Winnipeg, we knew was going to be here. We knew they were going to be rock stars and were going to be very good this year with cup contention, you know, in sight. Vegas, I wasn't convinced they could do it again, but they're doing it again. So,
yeah, they are.
You know, those are two teams I would think are that they're going to be pretty active, or we're going to hear some rumors, won't we, over the next month?
Yeah, no question about it. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff knows the light's never been greener for them to try and improve the team as much as they possibly can within reason. Without crazily mortgaging their future, because they've got some uncertainty there in terms of Jacob Trouba on the blue line, and how that's going to go, and then the same sort of financial questions get asked in Toronto. Well, it's all the same for them with Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor and the Trouba thing, which may or may not be financially motivated, but his long-term future is very much up in the air, and he's a prime time defenseman that you don't want to lose, but you may well be without him. So, yeah, I would say that about Winnipeg. I would certainly say that about Vegas too, because they came so close last year, and they think, hey, listen, they kind of rediscovered themselves. The biggest story for me in the Western Conference is how, you know, a month, 6 weeks ago, the Pacific Division seemed like a pile of hot garbage. Everybody seemed bad. And now Calgary's established themselves. They certainly have the look and feel of a team that could contend. San Jose, after a really slow start where you started to ask the question, ooh, you know, they're getting a little long in the tooth. Or maybe is it passing them by? They've reestablished themselves. Carlson's game's right on top, A-plus now. Burns is back to A-plus. Suddenly everything looks good in San Jose. And Vegas, who got off to this terrible start and seemed to be complacent, and in the doldrums, they're right back to where they were. So suddenly those three teams in the Pacific, now you look at Winnipeg, Nashville, and, I mean, Dallas hasn't been great. But suddenly the Pacific looks as strong or stronger than the Central, and I'm not sure a lot of us saw that coming.
No, yeah. No kidding. All right, Bob, enjoy the games tonight. We'll get you in here later in the week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Here's Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider.